You're listening to the Ministry Grow Show, brought to you by Reliant Creative, the creative agency for gospel-centered ministries. Find out more at reliantcreative.org.
Welcome to the Ministry Grow Show, a podcast dedicated to helping churches and ministries grow and make more effective impacts for the kingdom of God in an ever-changing digital world. Whether you're building and growing a gospel-centered ministry or leading a church, if you want insight into the strategies, struggles, challenges, and successes of other ministry leaders, you've come to the right place. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Barbara Carnero. She is the founder of Word Revolution. Barbara, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us about Word Revolution? Maybe share your origin story and why you guys exist.
Sounds good. Well, I've been an agency owner for about 20 some years now. I know that ages me really fast just to say that. But I wasn't a Christian until 13 years ago. So started in the marketing world, has always been my career. I've always studied communications and that's been my thing. But then once I came to faith, I realized that just some doors opening and opportunity to start working with churches. And that's what I did. I actually renamed my company, used to be called something else, and we changed to Word Revolution. So my path has been one of, it's funny because most people kind of, they grow up in the church and they kind of have to learn the marketing side of things. And for me, it's like, I kind of, you know, I've always been surrounded by communication and marketing, and now I'm trying to figure out what a narthex is. So it's kind of like trying to understand the Christianese that for many people is so common and so natural. So that has been my path. And it's been a fun journey. I absolutely love what I do. So that's what Word Revolution does. We work on branding, messaging, communications for churches. If it starts to dabble into the marketing side of things, that's normally when I ask for help. So normally, if you want anything like SEOs and ads, I normally will introduce you to somebody. But anything that has to do with communication, branding, messaging, that's normally what we do. Yeah.
Awesome. And so, are you only working with churches and like local churches, or are you working with parachurch organizations as well?
We do work with ministries, and we also work with secular organizations. I would say that our efforts, like our marketing efforts, are always towards churches. So my pursuit and the things that we do and say, we have a group on Facebook that is always going towards churches. But we do find that some people will either refer us or come to us, or even older clients. I have clients that have been with us for 15 years now, and wow. You know, they're not churches, and they're still working with us. And so they continue to recommend us to people that they work with. And so we kind of have a very interesting mix. But in our pursuit, my dedication and my marketing is to find churches that need the services that we provide.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like very similar story and journey to us. We have historically always been a creative agency, just like you, branding, messaging, website design, photo, video, storytelling, anything in the helping ministries establish some of those foundational brand elements, and then saying, all right, from here on the ongoing and consistent marketing conversation, we'd like you push that off. Now, that has shifted and changed over the last about a year and a half. So we've started to move into that space after realizing that I didn't see a lot of Christian marketing agencies leading with story in their strategy and efforts. And so we've started some different initiatives. But today is not about us. It's about you. So it was cool because it relates. How you got your start and what you guys have focused on is very similar to what we do at Reliant. So that's cool. Offline, we talked a little bit about this already, but I wanted to talk about archetypes. Can you start by explaining what church archetypes are and why you think they're important for understanding the dynamics within a church community?
Yeah. It aligns with exactly what you're saying, which is this idea of leading with storytelling. And so, I mean, we don't have to tell people that we're wired for storytelling. Like, human beings are literally designed that way. And so if not that you need any examples, but some of them are quite easy to understand. And so if you've ever had an experience with somebody and they say something and then they leave and you start like, okay, are they upset with me? Are they mad? Are they like, what happened? So it's interesting how your brain, when there's holes, when there's empty spaces, your brain needs to fill them up, and it needs to fill them up. And the only way it knows how to do it is to build a story around it. And so whenever there's empty spots and anything that you, that happens in your life, the natural response of your brain is to create these scenarios. That's why we sometimes worry about things that never happen, because our brain goes into that story building. And it's funny because sometimes you start even responding physically to something that has never happened because your brain built that story and now you believe it. So that's how wired we are for storytelling. Now, storytelling is deeply connected to human desires. Like, so think about any key human desire that you have. And what's fascinating to me, if we can nerd out a little bit, is that we have different key human desires. We may actually have all of them or expressions of all of them. But some of us are mostly looking for hope. Some of us are looking for belonging. Some of us are more looking for truth. And so, or you can even go through seasons where right now, what I really need is just to feel like I'm a part of something, right? And so these human desires are the way that we bridge from us to people, and their key human desires is with storytelling. A great example I've seen of this in the past is this, my gosh, how do you call it? Like, you know, the guys that are like helping with traffic outside of schools, and that's all they do. And they're like, okay, stop traffic, kids cross. Okay, traffic goes. Okay, stop traffic, kids cross, traffic goes. Like, it's like, it can't get more boring than that. But this one guy was just super mad and upset and cranky all the time, like this one person doing that outside of a school. And so all of the kids, as they were driving, they were walking by, everybody, they didn't like him. There was just like this, I don't like the guy, you know, he's always cranking, always mad. Until one teacher said, this man has lost his daughter to suicide about 3 months ago. And suddenly everything changed. Like, for whatever reason, immediately everybody start having compassion over this man. The teacher then said, that story is not true, but now you see him differently. So he made up the story of why that person was cranky, why he was upset, why, I mean, maybe he was just bored, you know what I mean? But storytelling has the ability to connect us in a way that nothing else in this world can connect us with. So when you put these things together, you think of how our brains are wired, how we all have key human desires, and that's how we connect and relate to others. There are ways that we have to think about, you know, if you are in ministry, most of your time is probably spent thinking about how to connect, engage, relate, empathize, right? So a lot of what we do in ministry has to do with how do we get people to respond? We have to keep these things in mind. And so what I have realized over the years is that I was a big advocate of know your audience. You know, I was always yelling from the rooftops, like, you got to know who you're talking to, get to know them, understand them, you know, map out all of their emotions, and, you know, big advocate for the people that we serve. And I believe that is our starting point. We have to keep them top of mind. But what I came to realize is that, you know, communication can only exist if there's two people, one speaking, one receiving. Story only makes sense if you have more people. Otherwise, it's just a monologue, right? So what I noticed, and I think this is something that God has revealed to me, and maybe in the last like 2 to 3 years, is that the identity of the church matters too. And so not only the people that you're speaking to, but the identity of the church. So it's the identity of the person and the identity of the church. And so with that in mind, I was like, oh, there's two players. Like, there's two pieces to this. And it suddenly, it started to make sense. So for me, archetypes are basically types of personality that the churches can have. So you can have a personality of a leader or a teacher or a rescuer or I mean, there's a bunch of them. I think there's 12 in total that we can list. But what I'm seeing is that we can't just focus on the audience, although that is a big important piece. We have to care about them, but we also need to understand what is the identity of the church. And so I've been mapping out these 12 archetypes to churches. It's been a fun exercise. Let me tell you, like, I have spreadsheets and, you know, all of these documents, trying to find patterns and understand how the language even applies to churches so that it makes sense to them. Does that make sense? Like, I know that kind of threw a lot of psychology stuff out.
So far. That's really good. Yeah. So it's when we're building brand, right? You're just running an agency, you're helping ministries build brand.
Yeah.
From what I am understanding and some of the stuff that we have taught around this brand archetype stuff is we're the ultimate goal is to try to get an audience connected to the brand at an emotional level, right? Well, yes. People don't connect with, how I would say is people don't connect with your corporate manifestos. They don't care about your vision and your mission and all those corporate corporate terminology, right? People connect with characters and they connect with people. And so if you can, as you're sharing your story, your brand story, whatever form that ends up looking like, if you can create a character for your organization and your brand or your ministry that shows up in that story, now that audience can connect at that with that brand at a much more meaningful and a much deeper level than just a mission and a vision and a set of core values, right? And so
we want to
connect at that deep emotional level, because that ends up down the road creating brand loyalty, brand advocacy. Those are what we're shooting 100%. For. We're trying to not just get people to donate to our cause, but come alongside the ministry in this long-term journey, be a part of the story in a much more meaningful way than maybe just donating. And in order to do that, you have to connect at that deep emotional level. And so incorporating when you tell your stories, how does the ministry show up? How does the organization show up in that story? And what is the character that it's showing up as? Because that's what an audience is going to connect with. So, 100%. I totally see the value and the significance in it. It's something that we've put a lot of thought into. And so, are you specifically working off of the 12 Jungian archetypes?
Yes. So, what we have done, this has been, like I said, it's been 3 years in the making. Those 12 archetypes are basically human archetypes. Like, we can identify them for ourselves. So, individuals can figure out what their archetype is. And I do believe that we can express all of them in one way or another, but there's always one that comes up to the surface. And the same is true for brands, because brands are nothing but a representation of humans anyways. And I know that you can get into big corporations that, you know, become kind of less humanized, I guess. But at the end of the day, they're still exemplifying a specific personality. Because if I talk to you about Godiva chocolate and I talk to you about Apple, those two will instill emotions in you and responses in you, but they're very different. And so they connect at a different level because of the personality of the brand. And so the brand can expand and grow and scale beyond one individual. But if you know and understand what is the top archetype that you have, you're going to be able to multiply faster, because people will connect to that and they will be able, like you said, to become more faster advocates for what you're doing. Now, those 12 archetypes that have been identified many, 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 what, centuries ago? I don't know. Many years ago, many decades for sure. Those archetypes have never been connected to churches, but churches are brands just like any other organization out there. Like, people still connect with you visually through a logo. They still connect through the messaging. They still connect through the perception that they have about you. And so we can't separate churches from anything else out there that we connect to. So by applying the archetypes to churches, a big chunk of the work that I've been doing is to map it out and say, okay, this pastor is this archetype. This church is this archetype. And it's a lot of assumptions, obviously, because I'm not asking them specifically, but I'll give you a couple of examples that will bring it to life. one of the archetypes is called a teacher archetype. So when you think of a church like Tim Keller's church in New York, you can understand how even the way that the stage is designed, the way that there's a chair and the way that he's teaching, the way that the auditorium is set up, the way that he even preaches, it's all based on the archetype of a teacher. The biggest key human desire associated with this one is truth. So people that will go to that church are most likely pursuing truth. Yeah. And they would actually get truth because that's what a teacher would do. And so if you've ever been in a church where people would be like, well, I'm not fed enough, they're basically pursuing a teacher church. That's pretty much it at the core, right? They want somebody that would focus on the truth. Does that mean that other churches aren't sharing the truth? Not at all. But they're sharing the gospel, let's put it that way, through a different key human desire. Because some people will go to church not because they need truth, because they need belonging. Because honestly, sometimes they just need hope in their lives, right? So that will lead them to pursue a different church altogether. And there's a good chance that your church is designed in a specific way. So if you look at Andy Stanley, you would see that he would have the screen and he would have the presentations done. And you could say, oh, that's also a teacher church because he has also his little stool there. But that is actually not the case. So Andy Stanley, I would put in the category of what we call a leader church. A leader church is more focused on empowering leaders to become leaders. And so what Andy has done is create systems and processes and ways to systematize and simplify information so that leaders can become leaders faster. And so when you look at somebody attending that church, there's a great chance that they're pursuing something different. Yeah? You would still get the truth. Don't get me wrong. I don't want you to think that because unless I'm a teacher church, I'm not teaching the truth. That is not the case. But there's something that rises up to the surface more. We have what we call servant churches. Servant churches are very focused on literally serving. Like, that is what they exist for. And so, would they teach the truth? Yes. Will they create systems to create leaders? Yes. But at the very top, like, the way that they really connect and get people engaged is by serving. Out of these 12 archetypes, what I have noticed the most over the years, Zach, is that sometimes, you know, we get these hand-me-downs. We start looking at, oh, I'm going to look at what Hillsong is doing or what Mosaic is doing or whatever the next big, you know, church is doing. But most likely, they're already out of your range as far as size, which is already not a good indicator, right? You should get inspiration, but not copy what they're doing. But at the same time, if they're completely out of your archetype, you're already copying somebody that has nothing to do with the way that you're designed to be a church. So that for me is the important point. Because let's take the example of Charlotte, right? Elevation Church, big church, a lot of people go there. And you were a small church in Charlotte. You might think, well, they're all going to prefer the big church that has all the programs. They're all going to prefer that one that has the X, Y, and Z and the, you know, the celebrity pastor and whatever. But there are going to be people in your area that actually don't want that. They want something completely different. And that's what your church is designed to achieve. So anyway, archetypes gives us freedom. I love it because it allows churches to say, this is my lane. Nobody can take it. And I don't want anybody else's lane. And it gives you the freedom to start amplifying the message because now you know your story. Now you know that your connection is through belonging or hope or truth or joy or whatever that might be. And so it's like now you can be who you are and not have to say sorry about it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. And it allows you to, like you said at the end there, this is who we are as an organization, as a ministry. This is what we believe in. This is what we stand for. And if you also believe those things, right, they're brand beliefs. If you also believe those things, if you also resonate with these things and relate to these things, this is the place for you. And if not, that's okay. Like, there's other places that you'll probably relate to and connect to at a deeper level. But this is who we are. And so it takes... I think it's a different approach than the traditional, what's our demographic, what's our audience, what's the persona that we're trying to engage with, and now we need to pander to that audience. Rather, it says, this is who we are. This is what we believe. Exactly. And if you also believe those things and you also find value in those things, you're going to come alongside us and engage with that. There's more than enough places, especially 100%. Within the church, for us to go. Yeah. Like, there's more than enough options, at least in the West. And so to make a stand, I think, is something that I believe is something important within the ministry conversation, because we're saying this is what we believe. And if you also believe those things, come alongside us and we'll do some cool stuff together. So,
yeah. And, you know, it's not a limitation. Sometimes we may see that as a limitation when in reality is freedom. Because what I have seen over the years, we're about to hit 100 ministries or churches that we've put through this process top to bottom. So, it's enough of a number of churches to see how people respond to this idea of having an archetype and having a brand personality. And the reality is, every single time we hear the same thing, it's like, oh, that's like, that makes so much sense. So it's not like I'm coming in and saying, hey, this is your archetype moving forward. It's basically capturing what's already there. So you're already doing things intuitively. You just can't put your finger on it. You can't name it. And so the role of bringing these archetypes is simply to name what you most likely already know. And so if you feel like some things are out of alignment, there's a good chance that you're simply operating out of alignment of what that design is supposed to be. We had an example happen this past week, which was really interesting. And so there was a church that was, the archetype was the revolutionary. So think of the revolutionary as the church that is doing something for the misfits. Okay, we've heard of churches like the Triple X Church for prostitutes. We've heard of churches in the metaverse. You need to think like way out there, churches that are literally creating a space of faith for those that would never set foot in the church. Yeah, the normal church, traditional church. So these are the revolutionary churches. And they said, we used to gather in this really traditional building because that's the building we had access to. And we could never really grow. Like, there was never, like, because what was happening was the physical space they were gathering in didn't match the DNA of what the church was trying to do. Is there anything wrong with meeting in that building? Absolutely nothing. Yeah. But for that particular church, there was a misalignment. And so you align in terms of worship, you align in terms of the building, you align in terms of everything, like even the order of service, or if you're even gathering on a Sunday, right? So you decide based on your archetype, you will be able to make decisions way faster and way easier because it will align with the essence of who you are. And the same is true for when you need to say no to something. So if you ever have a minister coming to you and saying, hey, we need to do X, Y, and Z, you no longer have that awkward no, you know, like now you have a real reason to explain why we're doing this instead of that. Mm-hmm. So a couple of examples, a friend church is what I've seen the most common one. So friend churches, they're all about community. They're all about, you know, it's the guy next door. It's that friend, right? And so that type of church can really invest in things like block parties. Doesn't matter how big or small your church is, block parties create opportunity for community. If I am a teacher church, then I would create Bible studies. If I'm a partner church, which is deep, deep, deep into discipleship, I would create retreats. And so you see that even deciding on the programs to have would be different based on your archetype. And so imagine having to be able to remove the pressure that says, oh, you got to do the Bible studies and the retreats and the, right, all the things. Well, you don't. Focus on what makes sense for your church. Master it. Be good at it. Embrace the DNA of what you've been created to be. And then later, once you start expanding and growing or multiplying, you can decide if you do something else. You know?
Yeah. So when you take a church through this process, how much of the outcome is determined by the leadership of that church versus maybe what they'd like their church to be?
Yeah. So 100% leadership has to be a part of this. It is impossible for you to create such a vision without having the visionaries in the room. And so the people that affect the vision has to be present. I've seen a couple of scenarios. So I've seen scenarios where they know what they were supposed to do. They know who they're supposed to be, and they just don't know how to get there because it's not clear. So it's kind of like, it's just this gut feeling, but there's no real, you know. And so once you give them permission to be like, oh, this is who we are, then they just take over. It's like, that's it. They take off and they're good to go. And then you also have the churches that are like, oh man, this is who we need to be, but we're this, and it's completely different. And they don't know how to navigate that shift where they know they're supposed to be, act, behave differently. And I'm not just talking about tradition. Sometimes it's not about being stuck in the past. Sometimes it's literally just being misaligned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can have a church that just has a bunch of programs and probably shouldn't. Yeah. So it doesn't mean they're outdated or more modern. It has nothing to do with how traditional or not you are. It has nothing to do with your size either. This is simply to do with the methods that you use to communicate the story. And so what are you saying if you're doing all the things? Most of the time, you're actually not saying much. Everything is invisible because you're saying so much that people just ignore everything that is happening, right? And you don't have a personality. If you're doing all the things for everybody, you basically become this, like, I don't know, playing all these instruments, but none of them I'm playing well enough, right? So imagine if you could narrow and focus and be intentional. One of the biggest pieces of resistance that I hear before people go through the process, we never have resistance after. At least so far. So hopefully that'll stay that way. But before people go through the process, one of the resistant pieces as well is like, well, you know, we don't want to be too narrow focused. We don't want to have just one thing. We want to serve more people. We want to be diverse. We want to be multi-generational. And I think those are all true. I think you can be diverse and you can be multi-generational. But at the end of the day, if you design your environment for something to come and find hope, it may not necessarily connect to the person that is coming to find truth. It may not necessarily connect to the person that is coming to find joy. Could they come? Yes, absolutely. Remember, God can do anything and he will bring you people no matter what you do, right? So there will always be people inviting people and people coming really by the grace of God. But in your communications, the minute you start to speak to all of these key human desires all at once, you lose everybody because you're not, you know, clear enough. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. That's one of the things that we've found as we've taken ministries through this process is you'll, especially as you will go through this process with leadership. And oftentimes mm-hmm. we try to make sure that we have them answer the questions that we take them through from the perspective of the brand and the ministry mm-hmm. rather than their own personal tendencies or desires or what they most resonate personally. And so I'm just interested to hear how you guys approach this process when you may have three gotcha. Different leaders that are resonating Absolutely. With three different archetypes personally.
yes.
But none of them really line up. And so do you guys work in like a primary archetype and a secondary? Or is there always only one? How does that play out for you guys and your clients?
Yeah. So generally I try to get their top one. So unless it's like a real tie and you have two archetypes that are really, really high. But even then, what I would use is to get all of our discovery notes and really figure out which one really goes, you know, comes up to the surface. Mm-hmm. So even when there's two, we still want to identify what is your top one. It is rare that we will combine two. It is possible to combine, but I still want to make sure that I know this is our main
right.
one, period. There's always one that is the main one. We've had churches that went through this process. And let me tell you, you can kind of measure the level of unity within leadership based on how long it takes to go through the quiz. So after discovery, we have a quiz. That quiz, normally many churches will go through it in 30 minutes, maybe an hour. We've had churches that had to meet several times to go through it. We had a church that split after going through it. Now, the quiz didn't call the split. The quiz just revealed it. And so mm-hmm. what's happening is when you're asking people, hey, out of these options, which one is us? And they can't really agree. So that just reveals that there's a different envision internally that, in my opinion, needs to be resolved before you do anything else. So this type of exercise by saying, this is our personality, this is our design, it helps really eliminate a lot of this confusion. So if you ever have a leader that feels like, I don't know, we're rowing in this direction, and that person is rowing in that direction, but you can't really tell why, like, because what they're saying may not be wrong. Think about it. A person can come into your church and say, we should do this, 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 and this, and none of that is wrong. It's just not for your church, right? So it's not like the ideas are bad. It's not like they're not saying anything wrong. And there's a good chance that that person might actually be called to build their own church that is different. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah. how does this start to play out, or how can maybe understanding these church archetypes help churches tailor their communication strategies to better connect with their audiences? And what does this actually look like in practice once you start applying it in your communications, whether that's the digital conversation or in the analog? How does that end up playing out?
Oh, this is the part that excites me the most, because I find that a lot of us have the writer's block where you're just like, oh, what am I going to write next? What am I going to post next? What am I going to put in the newsletter next? And so you have all these questions of trying to figure out how to create content. By the way, one of the main shifts, I guess, that I think we need to do is we should not start from content. Content should be our last piece. We need to start from who are we talking to? What is the outcome and the goal that we want to communicate? And then from there, decide on content. So a lot of the struggles that we might feel is because we're starting from the end instead of starting from the foundation. And so when I take that step back and I'm like, okay, let me go back to the foundation. I love creating what we call communication core values. Yeah. It's nothing to do with the core values of a church. Like, you can have them, you should have them, you should put them on the wall. But I think we need to have communication core values. We also call those manifesto. Yeah. So like, what is the manifesto when it comes to communicating with our people? And so one of them, for example, is living an active faith. Okay. So that's one way, one thing they want to keep in mind when they're communicating. So if I'm creating, let's say, a newsletter, and one of the things that I'm focusing on is living an active faith, I'm going to tell you how it connects to the archetype, how it connects to the people, and how it simplifies your communication. So this is what we call a catalyst church. A catalyst church is focused on hope. And if I can sum it up, this is the church that turns messes into miracles. That's it. That's what they do. So think about coming to that church. Your life is a mess. Everything's a mess. And you leave with the sense that miracles are possible. Does that mean you leave with a miracle? No. You leave with the sense that miracles are possible. So there's this mindset shift where they increase hope in your life in a way that allows you to believe that, you know what, this mess could actually change. So that's a catalyst church in essence. Catalyst churches, I can name a few. Louis Giglio is one of them. If you watch some of the stuff that he preaches, it's pretty much focused on this transition from mess to miracle. So now, keeping that in mind, I'm coming from a catalyst church who's focused on this hope. That's the big word for them, hope. And then you have live an active faith as the core value or the manifesto. It's like this is what we stand for. Live an active faith. Their audience in this case is a 42-year-old. No, she's older. She's a Gen X. So it's about 45, 46-year-old woman in the Detroit area. So now I'm combining a catalyst archetype that turns messes into miracles, a 45, 46-year-old woman in the Detroit area. And I'm saying to this person, live an active faith, because that's the core value. And so when I go to the newsletter, I can have a section in the newsletter every week that says living an active faith. And I can give them examples of living an active faith. I can give them calls to action to live an active faith. I can give them stories of people that have lived an active faith. And every week I can just rotate something in that category that reinforces the language, live an active faith, aligns with the archetype, and aligns with the person. So that is just one way, and that's just one channel. Now you move to social media, we can exemplify that same thing in social media as well. We have one church that is in Texas, and they are a church friend, a friend church. And well, we had realized this is Bible Belt. Okay, so Texas Bible Belt friend church is the archetype. This is a millennial man in his 33s as the audience, you know, persona that we have identified. And so in trying to identify the language and trying to identify, like, what is the language that we want to use at this person? And remember, it needs to be friend. It needs to be something that your neighbor would tell you. It can't be elaborate and fancy. It has to be something that's like, you know, a dude sitting around for Halloween and, you know, kids are playing and you're just sitting in your backyard or your front yard, something that a friend would tell you. And so one of their, we call it a tribe language, is Jesus really is good. It's like, I can see the person looking at me saying, you know what, dude, Jesus really is good. And so it went all the way to their signage. So when we were looking at their signage, we had this banner outside and, you know, the idea, what would churches normally do? Oh, he is when we meet, times and day of the week, and maybe the name of the pastor or whatever. Or if we have Bible, you know, Sunday school, right? So that's informational banner. Well, we wanted to do something that aligns with the archetype and aligns with the people. So the banner, when you drive by, it says, Jesus really is good. In Midtown as it is in heaven, which is their location, in Midtown as it is in heaven. And then below, in very small letters, the time they meet and the website. So when you go by, you probably can't read the small stuff because that's not as important. We want you to read, Jesus really is good. Because that is something that a friend would tell a friend, right? So that's the type of language, the type of structure, the type of storytelling that we want people. Now think about it. You're going down the road. Life is not good. Something is, and you see a sign that instead of saying we meet on Sundays at 9 a.m., it says Jesus really is good. You're telling a story with just a few words. They know how to find the information, how to get there, you know?
Yeah, that's good. Barbara, let's take a minute for today's sponsor, but when we come back, I want to continue this conversation because I think it's going to provide a lot of value for ministry leaders.
Sounds good.
Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money and marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results pages and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Grove Show when you sign up to get 20% off your first 3 months of management.
All right, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Barbara Carnero of Word Revolution. Barbara, we talked about this a little bit offline in the ad break, but I want to talk about demographics versus psychographics. We've touched on this a little bit.
Yeah.
This idea that psychographics would be, this is who we are. This is what we believe as an organization, as a brand. If you also believe these things and share these same values, you'll come alongside us and be involved with what we're doing through partnership and being a member of our church or whatever that ends up looking like, versus demographics is this is the type of person that we're trying to reach, the persona that we're trying to reach. What in your mind, how do you think about the two differences there, and how does this conversation around archetypes help us approach our marketing and our communications with a psychographic approach to our marketing and communications versus the traditional demographic approach?
So, you know, I feel like demographics per se are just statistical. And then, you know, there's only so much you can do with that. I think it's interesting for us to look at the numbers and understand them, and maybe even make decisions with those in mind. But at the end of the day, it's a very limiting way of seeing the people that you're able to serve well today. So the way that we perceive it is first, I actually like to understand generations. I've been studying them a lot, really capturing like what are the differences between each generation, because by the time they're children, all of their thoughts and ideas have been formed. And so the way the world was when you were a child in many ways will dictate a lot of the things that you feel and think and see. So so I'm going to give you very briefly a top level understanding of those four, because we normally start there. So when you think of baby boomers, they have a great sense of like their sense of worth comes from the things they contributed towards. And so we call them the contributors, right? So think of that generation as they feel a sense of worth if they contribute towards something. That's one of the ways they will relate to you or say yes to things, is if they feel like they can contribute. When it comes to Gen X's, which is the generation that came after, they're now in their 40s and 50s, so mid 40s to maybe early 60s, I believe. The Gen X's is what we call the consumer generation. Don't see this in a negative way. It's just because they saw the generation before them have the 9-to-5s, and that's it. That's all the money they had. They can make more. It was what it was. And so Gen X's are the first entrepreneurs, business owners. So they realize like the more I work, the more I can consume, the more I can have, which is a positive. Like if you think about it, so it is the consumer generation, which explains a lot of the church trends we're trying to get rid of right now. And then you move on to millennials. Millennials are what we call collaborators. So for them, sense of worth comes from what they collaborate towards. And that's an important distinction. And then after that, we have Gen Zs. I don't have any info on Alpha yet. They're too young. They're still being formed. But Gen Zs are already categorized as either co-creators or curators. So curators, why? Because there's so much information out there that they're forced to curate for others and find curators for them, because they can't consume everything. And so that's a generation that will... their brains are craving curation. And in fact, our brains are too, because of the amount of information out there. So now I like to look at the generations as an indicator to, you know, what's happening right now. So in your church, who are you naturally attracting? Just without doing anything, who are you naturally attracting? And there's a good chance that the people you're naturally attracting are between 10 years younger and older than your lead pastor, whoever's preaching or teaching. If you have a teaching team, there's a good chance you can have a little bit more of a variation, but naturally you're going to attract people within these ages. And so that means everything you want to do communication wise outside of this natural range will require intentionality. And so you need to be intentional towards what else you want to do besides that. And that's where the psychographics come in, because every decision that you're making is aligning with an emotion or a key human desire. And so we like to give this person a name and a face and an age, because I feel like it's important for especially the church leaders, to not think of audience as this faceless mass of people, but to humanize them. So I want you mm-hmm. to picture somebody sitting across from you. But I don't want you to be stuck in thinking this is the only person I can serve. Yeah, because that would make it for a very boring church if you think about it. But I do want you to humanize them. Look, so picture somebody sitting across the table from you. And now instead of like, sure, we're going to talk about age and all that. But like, okay, where does money go? What do they do for entertainment? What moves them? What breaks them? You know, what breaks their heart? What keeps them up at night? Like, these are the things that we want to really capture. And the exercise happens a lot faster if you can see one person than if you're just thinking generically. Because you will say things like, well, I don't know. Some are married. Some are not. Some are tired. Some are not. Some are busy. Some are not. And so, but I'm like, okay, well, picture one. Who do you see? Okay. Now tell me about a day in the life of that person. And we actually go through a story. So we literally simulate one day in their life at work, one day in their life at home. And so bring me through, okay, what do? They just grab their coffee and now what happened? oh, this person, this and that. And then, so now you start humanizing it at a psychographic level that you cannot do with demographics. It's just impossible because demographics will just give you statistic data, right? But by the time you start thinking of emotions, of what they do when crisis hit and how they talk to their spouse at night once they come back from work, now you're creating a story. And that story is how you connect to your story, because there's a good chance that your story is bridging their story. And at that point, it doesn't matter how old they are, what race they have. It doesn't matter any of those things, because now you have a story that you know you're capable of responding to. You know that people with this type of story can actually come to your church and find, you know, move from mess to miracle, for example.
Hmm. Yeah. So looking to the future, what are some of the trends or developments that you see on the horizon for church archetypes and this being applied and used and churches and organizations, ministries adopting this kind of idea as that art of communication shifts? Do you see churches taking this, starting to take this more seriously and recognizing the need for it? Or is it still, they come to it with a little bit of hesitancy maybe?
I feel like once people understand what it is, there's really no resistance, because this is a, like I said, is a tool that allows you to have freedom and a lot of clarity. So who wouldn't want clarity? At first it may sound strange, but once you explain, especially this idea of being wired for storytelling, it really connects to churches. I believe that every church is trying to figure things out, you know, so there's this great sense of like, we're doing some things. I don't know what's working, what's not. I don't know. And you can have churches that have a lot of things that are working, right? But a lot of it they're doing intuitively. So this gives a framework to help. Now, let's look into the future. I believe that more and more churches will start understanding what their archetype is, to a point where it will extend to things like their interior design, their style of preaching, their style of worship, obviously their communications and how they're coming across on social media. So it will bleed into many of the areas of what you're doing. If you let it, it will become the easiest route, because now you know how you're going to be portraying yourself. You understand what part of your story connects to their story. And it really makes it easy to create your communication pieces from there. Yeah.
Yeah. I just had this thought. I kind of wonder if what's going on with this celebrity pastor movement / maybe we'll call it a problem in specifically the Western church context. What I've argued a lot lately is that we're building brand around the wrong things, and specifically around the wrong individuals. Everything is that we promote digitally, especially, is pushed out from a primary single speaking figure, right? And so when you do that, you're building brand around that single individual. And the churches that have the guys that are the most charismatic, the most relatable, they're drawing attention and audiences that relate to those guys. The same thing's happening. They are what's the word I'm looking for? They are embodying an archetype that those audiences are relating to. And they're building brand around that primary speaking figure. Now, the problem with that is it's not building brand around what God is doing and what God might, the identity that God wants to that church to have as a congregation and a community. It's building it around a single individual. And so when that single individual can no longer bear the weight of the size and celebrity status that's been developed, whether intentionally or unintentionally, it becomes dangerous. And in most cases, it seems like these guys are burning out or flaming out in some way, shape, or form. And I think it's because we're trying to, whether intentionally or not, I think that's important to note, is I don't think the motivation in most of these cases is that I want to build a brand around a primary speaking figure and have that be the sole focus and intent. And but it is what's happening because of because of our behaviors, and specifically our digital behaviors. And so how do we shift that away from an archetype around a single individual to this is what this body of believers believes in. This is what we stand for. And if you also stand for these things, then you can come alongside us. I just think that maybe that's a lot of what's going on within that celebrity pastor conversation.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe every church has a movement inside of them. But that movement is not depending on a person, on one individual. It is the design that God has given to that church. And so I have found that, you know, you can follow an individual, but it will only go so far. Remember, that person will eventually either not be a pastor anymore or will die. So you're going to have to figure out how to continue that movement of that church without that person. And so if it goes away with its leader, then, you know, you might have built something either temporary or something focused on a person and not a, you know, the right things like you're describing. So now, but let's look at it from this angle. So if there is unity in the movement that you're creating and the identity of the church, it doesn't matter who is the leader. And the people will notice that, and the people will follow the movement, and it will follow, you know, what's being created instead of the individual that is leading it. And again, there's clarity that comes for everybody, because if the leaders have clarity, everybody else below has clarity. So clarity is contagious, right? If you have clarity and you communicate this, it's not a vision and mission. It's literally a movement. Like, what is the movement that we're creating? And so when I think of that, it has to exceed its leaders. It has to go beyond a specific person, 100%, because you're following a movement, a design, and not a person. Now, I know that there are leaders out there that are more charismatic than others, and it's easier for us to kind of, you know, follow along compared to, and it's, you know, what's interesting is that some archetypes, I've been mapping out, okay, this teacher seems to be more of this archetype, this leader more this archetype, this church more this archetype. And there's one category that is called the servant archetype. And funny enough, I have yet to find a pastor that I can associate with it. And I remember thinking, they're so under the radar, like by personality alone, the personality of that church called the servant church, the archetype, right? It's so focused on serving that you don't even hear about them. Isn't it fascinating? So you do have voices that are louder or more visible in some archetypes than others. And it is okay if you're in a church that doesn't have a celebrity and people don't know your pastor. Because the design is so different, and it's supposed to be that way. We're not supposed to be, you know, celebrating an individual, especially in some of these archetypes. So
yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. How, one of the things that I talk about when we talk about archetypes is, and maybe more specifically brand beliefs and establishing what we believe as a brand, when we're, so I would phrase it like, Simon Sinek has this really cool breakdown. He does why, who, how, and what, right? Yeah. What we've added in the mix of those three is the who, why, who, how, and what, the who being your archetype. And so if our why is our brand beliefs and our who is the character that we're showing up as in the, as a brand in the stories that we're telling.
Yeah.
Our stories are ultimately the thing that carry those brand beliefs and allow our character, our brand character, to show up in our stories. So as you go through this process, how important is storytelling in this conversation with your clients and using story and testimony and narrative to be the catalyst that carries those brand beliefs and allows the brand, the ministry brand, to show up in those stories as a character role? Like, what, how much do you talk about with that with your clients, and what does that look like tangibly in practice as they start implementing that idea?
Yeah, no, this is, you know, we do bring storytelling in many different avenues, and some of them not as obvious than others. And so we definitely want to capture stories of transformation, stories of hope, depending on the archetype of the church. We want to capture stories that make sense for that. So we don't just put people on camera and say, hey, tell me about this church. We actually have a specific questionnaire that we send out that is designed to capture the story. Because I believe that if you ask the right questions, you will get different answers. You will get the story and the transformation and not just a generic opinion, right? So it's like the reviews on Amazon that just say, oh, this is a great book. Well, okay, but didn't add anything, didn't take anything from, you know, it didn't add any value. But if you have somebody that is saying, wow, since I read this book, this and this and this and this and this changed in my life, now you have an actual transformation story. So we guide people through these forms and we ask them, hey, have your people fill them out. We start collecting language that comes from those forms. We also look at reviews that people have left and we start collecting language. There's one document we create that is called audience language. And we basically capture all of the things that we hear. We tell pastors, say, if somebody said something to you in the hall that, you know, reflects some of the language they're using to tell their story, write it down. We don't need the names of the person, just write it down here. So that's one way to do that. Because every time you need a story, you will have a repository of stories to use. You can grab a little piece, you can grab the whole story, you can make a video out of it, whatever you need to do. So that's one way. The other one is when we build the first page on the website, it follows storytelling principles as well. So guiding people down a story to go from A to B to C to D. So there's a specific kind of, you know, way to guide them. And I like to have what I call a vision casting video on every website. So that vision casting video is a 3-minute, 4-minute video where I have one of the leaders of the church. It's not saying, hey, we're welcome, we're glad you're here, like none of that. It immediately opens with a question. The question is the first trigger to get the person to connect and respond. So it starts with a question. That question has to do with the key human desire and the key beliefs that these two would have in common. So something. So we've had one that says, well, how about community? Is that even real? Is that even possible to have real community nowadays? And that is the opening question. So from there, we show them point A. Point A is where they are right now. You know, you're doing life alone. You really don't have people that you trust around you. You feel like you just, you know, you don't belong anywhere. And then we show hope for point B. What is point B? And I imagine being able to have a community that feels like family. And now you're bringing them through that story. So we open with a question. We show them point A. We give hope to point B. We invite them to something. That is the first invitation. We remove objections and then we invite them again. So that video is normally 2 to 3 minutes. Then we ask pastors to record it. We give them a little bit of a script, but doesn't matter what they say as long as they follow this storytelling principle. And let me tell you, I cry every time I watch them. Every single time I watch them, I was like, this is it. Like somehow in 2 or 3 minutes, we're capturing a story that others can listen to and they can actually respond to, instead of the whole like, hey, welcome to church such and such, come and see us, you know. So we need to go from generic information to real, like I'm telling you a story and I want you to respond to it. So that's one way we see it reflected on the website through the actual first page, but also that video on the side. So yeah, we try to capture them all the time. I love it. Like for me, I could live just making up stories and getting stories and writing content with stories. But I do know, and this is a reality, I do know it is hard for pastors to capture them. It feels like, next week. And then Sunday comes again. And so I try to help them create little opportunities to start capturing them. One thing we'll ask is like, okay, for a newsletter, can we share one story once a month? And so I'll create a form or a repository and people can add it. And we can format it and do it every week or every month. You don't have to worry about it. But could you cast vision for your people to start thinking about stories? So I know it takes a little bit of it is a learning curve. I guess that's the best way to put it. It's a learning curve for pastors to start thinking from a story standpoint. Yeah.
That's cool. Well, Barbara, this has been a really fun conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I hope it provides value for some of our audience. If people want to get a hold of you and learn more about what you guys are doing, do you have a website they can go to? Do you have any resources that they can check out? Where would you like to point us to?
Yes. So my email is barbara@wordrevolution.com. You can also go to wordrevolution.com/archetypes, and that's going to give you, and I can double check on that URL. Is it with an S or without an S? Now I have to remember, huh? Archetypes with an S. So yeah, with an S. So archetypes with an S. And that will give you a quiz. So obviously the quiz is a small piece of all of the discovery process we do. But it's an interesting exercise, and it gives you a little bit of an idea of where you could be in the range of 12 archetypes. So anyway, that's it. My email and my website. I'm very easily found on Facebook. I have a group there for accidental church communicators, so you'll find me on Facebook as well. Yeah.
I like that name. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Grow Show. If you enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and or review us on the iTunes store, and make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be an incredible guest on the Ministry Grow Show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at info@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org. See you next time.